Okay, good morning, everybody. It's wonderful to be back here again and see how many people come out to learn on a Sunday morning. It truly inspires me every time I come and see how many people come out on Sunday morning to learn. What I want to talk about today is the character of Yoav ben Tzruiah. When I was a kid, my father used to tell stories of the Shabbos table. And most of the stories came from Nevi'im Rishonim. And I hope you can relay this information back to my father. And many of the stories came from Sefer Shmuel Bet. Sefer Shmuel, and Shmuel Bet in particular, is a fascinating sefer. It's full of stories of bravery and murder, lies and deceit, romance and betrayal, all the stuff that movies are made of. And one of the characters that most of the stories that he told me just revolved around was the character of Yoav ben Tzruiah. Yoav is one of my favorite characters in Tanakh because he's such a complicated character. Here's a man who was a strong warrior, a fearless general, who defeated all of David HaMelech's enemies. And yet, at the end of his life, David HaMelech tells his son Shlomo to kill Yoav. Yoav is a man who convinced David when David's son Absalom ran away from the kingdom for a number of years. And Yoav saw that it pained David, and that David missed him. He convinced David to bring Absalom back to the country. And yet a while later, he went ahead and killed Absalom against David's express wishes. Here's a man who killed Absalom because he rebelled against David, started a rebellion against the king. But later on, Yoav himself goes and joins another rebellion against David. So who was Yoav ben Tzruiah? What drove him? And what was the cause of these seemingly contradictory actions or contradictory aspects of his personality? That's what I'd like to discuss today, based on the information that we have from Sefer Shmuel Bet and various sources in Chazal and the Mefarshim. To start with, Yoav was a man who was a fearless warrior. When David HaMelech became king over, initially he started out as king only over Shevet Yehuda. After Shaul died, only Shevet Yehuda accepted David as king, and it took another 6.5 years before the rest of the country accepted him. So he started out being king in Hebron. When he moved to Yerushalayim, after he was accepted by everybody, Yerushalayim had not been completely conquered. And so David HaMelech said, whoever goes ahead and conquers Yerushalayim from the Yebusim will become the Tsar HaTzava. And so Yoav went up. He already was a fearless, you know, warrior who had done things for David. He went up and he conquered Yerushalayim, and he became David HaMelech's Tsar HaTzava, the general of David's army. If we take a look at source one, towards the end of the source, let's say about 4 lines up from the bottom, 4.5, it says there, Asher Yitzei Lufneihem B'Milchama, V'Asher Yavo Lufneihem B'Milchama. Bnei Yisrael was looking for a person who would go and come before them in war. And it says there, Lo Kederach Sh'Acherim Osim, Shehem Mishalfin Chayalot, V'Hein Ba'im Yisof, not like other nations or other countries do, where they send their army out in front and the general stays behind. The guy does all the strategy, stays behind, protected. But rather, Elakashem Shasa Moshe, Shne'emar, gives a pasuk, Elakashem Shasa Yehoshua, like Moshe and Yehoshua did, because they went out in front of Bnei Yisrael and they led their troops. Okay, and then if you skip another line, V'asher Yavo Lufnehem Barosh, Shne'emar, V'yal Barishona Yoav Ben Tzruiah V'yehi Larosh. And just like Yoav did, that Yoav Ben Tzruiah went out and he led the army, he didn't stay in the back troops do the fighting and he just gave the orders. He went out and he led the army and he was in the front. This was Yoav ben Tzruiah. At a certain point, we're told in during David's rule, the king of Ammon died. And David had a good relationship with him, and so he sent a delegation to pay a shiva call to the son of the king of Ammon. Somebody from Ammon went ahead and told the prince, who is now the new king, that this delegation that David was sending was not an ordinary shlichus. In essence, the guy lied, okay? And he said that really David was sending out a team of spies to come and see the nature of the land, the palace, their strengths and their weaknesses that they can attack later on. So the prince went ahead, and he wanted David to know that he's not going to stand for this. When the delegation arrived, he had some people meet them and cut their garments in half in the middle of their body and shaved off half of their beards on one side of their face. He truly humiliated. The people came back to Eretz Yisrael, really afraid, literally afraid to show their faces in public, okay, with half their beard missing. David met them with some messengers and said, why don't you stay in a border town somewhere else until your beards grow back, and then you can join the people and you won't be embarrassed anymore. But this threat had to be dealt with. And so he sent Yoav to attack Ammon. Now, this wasn't a Melchizedek mitzvah. Okay, nobody was attacking Bnei Israel. So the country of Israel was not in any danger, nor was it a war to expand their territory. It was simply a war to say, you cannot behave towards us like this. And Ammon went ahead and hired a lot of strong warriors from other nations. So it was a war where the people, where the fighters of Bnei Yisrael knew that this was going to be a tough war. This was a very, they were up against a really tough enemy. And it wasn't to protect their country. Essentially, it wasn't really to protect their own land. But Yoav went ahead and he told them, take a look in source number 3. Yoav said to them, to the warriors as they went out, Chazak v'nitchazek be'ad amenu uve'ad arei elokeinu. Be strong for the sake of our cities and for the cities of our God. This is not a war that we're protecting our cities right this moment. But if we don't deal with this threat, then the next step will be that they'll attack us. So you have to view this as if you're actually protecting the very cities in which you live. And then Yoav said, V'Hashem ya'aseh hatov be'enav. God will do what is right in his eyes. And with this statement, he displays a tremendous amount of bitachon. Take a look at source number 4. Metudat David says about this. What was Yoav saying? V'Hashem ya'aseh hatov be'enav. But Salomar, V'im b'chol hitchazkut lo no'il. If all of our strength won't help us, Ya'aseh Hashem hatov be'enav unekabel be'ahava. We have to do the best that we can. But Yoav's bitachon meant, you can't just assume that God can do it for you. You have to do the best that you can. And even then, you can't assume that you're going to win. Bitachon means you do the best that you can, and Hashem will make the outcome the way that he sees fit. And Yoav's bitachon was expressed in the following 2 words, Nikabel v'ahava. Whatever God sees fit to do, we will accept it with love. We have to do our part and accept that the rest is in Hashem's hands. And then we'll accept whatever outcome there may be. So already we see that in addition to being a valiant warrior, Yoav was also a man with deep trust and deep conviction in God. Later on, Yoav captures the royal city of... they win the war. Later on, Yoav captures the royal city of Rabbat Bnei Ammon. And before he actually conquers the entire city, he sends a message to David HaMelech, and he says, quickly get ready, put on your armor and come, and you lead the attack, the final attack against the city, and capture the city. I've basically done all the work for you. You come in and conquer it, so that nobody will say that you have conquered the city, but that the credit should go to you. Now, this is really a tremendous display of modesty, or of Yoav doesn't care to get the credit for a job that he did. He'd rather allow David HaMelech to get all the credit for something that Yoav did the bulk of. But Yoav, although he was very loyal to David, did not always do what David said. When We know of the episode with Uriah Hachiti, when Uriah Hachiti was a very strong, valiant warrior, and he was off at war, and while he was off at war, David HaMelech saw his wife, Bathsheba, bathing, and David HaMelech fell in love with her. And so he had her brought to his palace and he slept with her. And a while later, she realized that she had conceived, she was pregnant, and she sent a message to David to tell him that. David HaMelech called Uriah back from battle and had Uriah report to him what was going on in the front lines. How's it going? How's Yoab? How's he doing? And after the report, David said to Uriah, "Thank you very much, terrific. Now go home to your wife, you deserve it. Go home, you'll go back to the battle tomorrow." But Uriah spent the night in the street. Now this kind of messed up David's plan. So David called him back the next day and said, "Why didn't you go home?" And Uriah said, "How can I go home? My entire troop is out there fighting the enemy, and I'm here, I can't go home to my wife, it's just not fair." David HaMelech tried again to send him home, didn't work. So David HaMelech sent him back to war the next day with a message for Yoav. And the message said, "Put Uriah up in the front lines of the battle and disappear and leave him alone there so that he'll be killed." Yoav got the message. He's commander-in-chief, he's the commander of the army, but Uriah is one of his soldiers, and he can't desert his own soldiers. So Yoav is something very smart. He listened to David, but he did it his own way. He was not going to desert his own troops. He was not going to leave one man alone. So instead of putting Uriah right in the front and then turning around and leaving, he sent a small unit to attack from a very dangerous angle. He knew the chances. He knew there was a very slim chance of their succeeding. He knew there was a great chance that they'd be killed. But it was a legitimate attempt. And he sent Uriah along with those men. A number of the men were killed. And Uriah was one of them. And so he sent the message back to David. He sent the message to David saying, "A number of men were killed." And he was afraid that David would be annoyed. Why did he attempt this? But he said, "But Uriah was one of them." So Yoav, we see, does things his way. He did what David wanted him to do, but he's loyal to his troops, and he's not going to desert somebody, even though David told him to. If we take a look at source number 7, I'm sorry, not 7. Take a look at the next page. If you take a look at source number 9, which is a source from the Gemara, but if you take a look at paragraph 3. So it's the third paragraph on that page. The Gemara says, "Yomalei David lo asa Yoav milchama, v'yomalei Yoav lo asak David b'Torah." Without David, Yoav would not have been able to wage war, and without Yoav, David would not have been able to sit and learn Torah. Dichtiv, as it's written, "Vayehi David oseh mishpat yitzaka l'chol amo, v'yoav ben Tzruya ahat tzava." David behaved or did righteousness and justice to all of his nation, and Yoav was in charge of the army. Ma ta'am David asa mishpat yitzaka l'chol amo, mishum de Yoav ahat tzava. They had a partnership here. Rashi explains it was because of David's schus in learning Torah that Yoav was able to be so successful in fighting his battles. And it was because Yoav was there fighting the battles that David was able to give the time to sit and learn and to give the time to the country, because he didn't have to worry about other things. And not only that, but if David was going to sit in Mishpat and Saka judging the people, a judge is no good unless you have somebody on the streets enforcing justice. And Yoav was that person. So Yoav and David had a terrific partnership. It was mutually beneficial. They each worked and helped the other succeed in their own work. Yoav also, I can't say he was an advisor to David, but he did advise David in certain matters. towards the end of, I think it's the last parak in Shmuel Bet, David decides he wants to count the people. And he tells Yoav to go ahead and count them. Yoav had previously, a while earlier, done his own mishka, done his own count of the army. But in this case, he objects. And he tells David, don't do it. What do you need to count the people for? And David says, I want you to count the people. So against his will, Yoav has to go and do it. If you take a look at source number 6, Yoav says, Amar Yoav, Minyan Shehu Tzorech, Ein Vachi Sarah. A count that is necessary, counting people because it's necessary, nothing's wrong with it. Nothing bad is going to happen. Minyan She'ein Bo Tzorech, Yesh Vachi Sarah. But if you're counting people just for the sake of counting, Yesh Vachi Sarah. It's not a good thing. Okay? Disaster can happen. Yoav understood. When he counted his army, he needed to know how many fighters he had. But this mifkad, this census that David was doing now, there was no need for it. And so he told David, don't do it. Only disaster can happen. Yoav understood that the nature of Bnei Israel, the special, unique quality that we have, is not in our numbers. Really, we're not in our numbers. It's rather in our character, in the special relationship we have with Hashem. And so David said, so Yoav said, don't count the people. But David there insists that Yoav goes and does it, and he does it. He actually does not count Shevet Levi or Shevet Binyamin, perhaps because he didn't want anything to happen to those two Shvatim. Binyamin had recently been decimated in a civil war, and so it was a very small number to begin with. And it says at the end of this source, V'yoav haya rosh Sanhedrin yoshev b'shevet tachmoni. A lot of discussion as to what the last three words mean, and the first one kind of disagree, but the consensus is that the last three words, Yoshev B'Shevet Tachmoni, refer to a person who is a Talmid Chacham, who is a very smart person. And this particular source, Yalkut Shimoni, identifies that person as Yoav. Yoav Hayarosh Sanhedrin, he was the head of the Sanhedrin, and he was this very wise person. And if you just... One other source I want to point out right now regarding that is in source number 5, the very last line, the very last half a line, Hu haya Yoav sheya gadol batara v'gibor b'melchama. Yoav was a big Talmud Chacham and a valiant warrior. So the picture that we have of Yoav until this point is a fearless general, one who will put his life on the line also for his troops, who goes out before them in war, who is a Talmud Chacham as well, and not afraid to advise or to contradict David when he thinks that something really is wrong. And this is Yoav as we see him so far. But there's a lot more to who Yoav was. Yoav ben Tzruya. Tzruya is actually not his father's name. Tzruya is his mother's name. And Tzruya was David's sister. So Yoav was David HaMelech's nephew. The first time we meet Yoav in Tanakh, is right after David, after Shaul dies and David becomes king over Shevet Yehuda. At this point in time, the rest of Bnei Israel had elected Shaul's son Ishbosheth as king over the rest of the country. So only Shevet Yehuda accepted David HaMelech as their king. And Avner ben Ner was the general of Ishbosheth's army. Yoav was not yet general of David HaMelech's army, but he was one of the main warriors. And he had two brothers, one named Avishai and the other Asael. And the three of them were like a team. They were all excellent, excellent warriors. And one day, David HaMelech wasn't in any rush to force himself into the kingship. He could have waged an all-out war, and he decided that he was willing to wait and to let it come to him slowly. He wanted the people to accept him from their own will and not being forced to do so. So one day, Yoav and Avner and their respective armies bumped into each other around a well. And Avner said to Yoav, you know what, let's have a dueling match. Let's have our armies, you know, you pick 12 men, I'll pick 12 men. Let's have them fight against each other, see who's better. Okay, so they each picked 12 men. They're all excellent warriors, and so each at the same instant, they stood in two lines, each at the same instant grabbed the other and thrust his sword into the other, and all 24 men died. This started a battle right then and there, and many men died that day. And Yoav's army was chasing Abner's army. Asael, Yoav's brother, was known to be a very fast runner, and he was running after Abner. And Abner told him, "Stop chasing me, okay? Leave me alone, turn around and go somewhere else." And Asael didn't listen. And he kept chasing Abner, because he understood that if he could kill the general, Ish-bosheth would be left powerless. And so Asael continued chasing Abner. And Abner tried again, and he said, "Look, turn away and go over to any other soldier, go kill somebody, or not kill, go get some other soldier and take his armor, but just leave me alone or I'm going to have to kill you." And Asael didn't listen. And he continued pursuing Abner. So Abner turned around and took his spear and jabbed it behind him, thrust it through Asael, and Asael died. Everyone was, you know, the army of Yoav was clearly upset. They continued pursuing Abner until such a point as Abner, they were a little bit farther away on top of a hill, and they turned to Yoav and said, "How long are you going to let this continue? You know that something bad, or you knew that something bad was going to happen. You have to stop the fight now." And so Yoav calls off his troops at this point. But clearly, Yoav was not going to forget this. A while later, Abner was accused by Ish-bosheth of having taken one of Shaul's concubines for himself. And at this point, Abner was incensed. He's been loyal to Shaul all along. He's been loyal to Ish-bosheth. And to now be accused of this, he turns to Ish-bosheth and says, "You know what? I'm through with you. I'm going over to David's side. And I'm going to help fulfill what Hashem told David, that he would become a king over all of Bnei Israel." And so he goes to David, and he says to him, "I'd like to make a treaty with you. I was against you in the past, but I've changed now. I accept you as king, and I would like to bring the rest of Bnei Israel over to your side." David accepts this. He makes a treaty with Abner, and he says, "Go ahead and go round up the rest of the nation. Go convince them to follow me." So Abner leaves the palace. Yoav, shortly afterwards, comes back to the palace. And somebody meets Yoav and says to Yoav, "You'll never believe what just happened. Abner just came to the palace. This enemy that we've been pursuing all along just came to the palace, and you'll never believe it, but David HaMelech let him go in peace." So Yoav thinks, this is crazy. And he goes to David. Now, Yoav was not necessarily told about the breach that was made between Abner and David. And he goes to David and he says, "You can't do this. You're crazy. Abner was not coming in peace. Abner was coming because he wanted to see what strength you have. He was really coming to see how strong you are, what the nature of the situation is. He's really lying. He's going to go back now and he's going to come and attack us." And Yoav leaves the palace and he runs after Abner. And he sends soldiers to catch Abner. They catch Abner, they bring him back. Yoav meets him in the sha'ar, in the gate, and he kills him. When David HaMelech finds out, I mean, this is threatening to his whole kingdom. First of all, he just made a treaty with this man. And now the entire rest of Bnei Israel, who were supposed to be coming over to David HaMelech's side, is now going to view David as a traitor. So David curses Yoav. If you look at source number 2, he says, "I am innocent of this, this blood that was shed, Yahulu al Rosh Yoav ve'al kol beit aviv, that innocent blood should fall upon the head of Yoav and all of his father's house. Ve'ali karet mi beit Yoav zav u'mitzara u'machazik v'pelech v'nofel b'cherev v'chasar lechem." And there should never be cut off from Yoav, but there should always be among his family a zav and a person with an issue and a leper and a person who, you know, walks with a cane, and people who fall by the sword, and people who lack food. And then a number of psukim later, "V'anochi hayom rach u'mashuach melech, I today am weak and anointed, although anointed king, v'ha'anashim ha'ela b'nei tsruya kashim mimeni. And these men, these children of tsruya, say my own nephews, are too harsh for me. Yishalem Hashem la'osei hara'a kira'ato. Hashem should pay back the evildoer according to his evil deeds. Now Chazal say that this curse actually rebounded. And everything that David said should befall Yoav actually ended up bouncing back and happening to David's own family. Because as we'll see, it's not so clear that what Yoav did was wrong. If you take a look at source number 9, at paragraph, the fourth paragraph on the second page, the Pasuk tells us, this is the Gemara is quoting the Pasuk, Vayetze Yoav Me'im David Vayishlach Malachim Acharei Avner Vayashubu Oto Mibor Hasira. They brought Avner back from Bor Hasira. Question is, what is Bor Hasira? We'll get to that in a moment. But Yoav takes him, and it says he brought him into the Sha'ar, the Daber Ito Basheli, to talk with him Basheli. That's a difficult word, and it's basically translated as Basheli, as quietly. He wanted to talk with him quietly. But the Gemara says, Basheli comes from the word Shal. Shal na'alecha, take off your shoes. And Rashi explains, Yoav devised a little trick. He said to Avner, come here, I have a shaila to ask you. I have a question, I need a halacha decided here. And he took Ya'ar, Avner into the shal, the gate where people used to discuss, they had partake in there. And he said to him, what happens when a woman needs to have yibum? Okay, if a husband dies and does not leave any children, so there's no continuation of his name. So the halacha is that the next closest relative marries the woman, and any child born from that marriage is called by the first husband's name, or his family. So that's called yibum. But if the next closest relative does not want to marry the woman, then you have to perform a rite called chalitza. So the way chalitza is performed is that the woman bends down and takes the shoe off the brother, it's usually a brother or the relative, and there's a whole ceremony, and essentially that signifies the fact that he does not want to perform yibum. So Yoav said to Avner, how does a woman who has no arms perform yibum? How does she take off the shoe? So Avner bent down to show how she would have to do it, perhaps with her teeth, and while he was bending down, clearly, unaware of what Yoav was planning to do, Yoav went then and killed him. So it was clearly trickery here. So the Gemara says that Yoav brought Avner back from Bor HaSira, from the well of Sira. What is this well of Sira? So the Gemara says, my Bor HaSira, Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, Bor Visira Garmulo La Avner Shayeh Harei. A well, or a bor, we'll find out what that is, and a Sira caused Avner to be killed. When David HaMelech was running away, before he was David HaMelech, when he was running from Shaul, there were two occasions on which he was very close to Shaul and could have killed Shaul and refrained from doing so. One of those times, Shaul and his army were sleeping down in the valley below, and they were unaware that David was nearby. And David could have killed Shaul, but instead of doing so, he went and he took the flask of water from right next to Shaul, and the spear that was right next to him. And then he went back up onto the hill, and he called out loud and woke up the men in Shaul's army below. And he said, look what I have. I could have killed Shaul because I was right next to him, but I refrained from doing so because I love him so much. Please understand that I am not a threat to you, and I'm not going to steal the kingdom away from you. I'm not going to kill you, and I'm not out to rebel against you right now. This was Avner's opportunity, because Avner was Shaul's general. This was Avner's opportunity to say to Shaul, look what he's saying. David is saying this correctly. Leave him alone. Stop chasing after him. Stop trying to kill him. But instead, Rashi tells us, Avner went ahead and said to Shaul, don't listen to David. He's not telling the truth. He interprets the word bor well as referring to that flask of water. And he said to Shaul, one of our soldiers must have given that secretly to somebody in David's army. And that's how David has it. He couldn't have come here. On a separate occasion, David HaMelech was in a cave, hiding in a cave, and David was, for the thing again, hiding in a cave, and Shaul HaMelech came into the cave and had to go to the bathroom. And David was that close to Shaul and could have killed him, and instead he took out his knife and cut a piece of Shaul's robe off, and he kept it. And then when Shaul was at a distance from him, he called out loud and he held up a piece of cloak and he said, "Look what I have. I could have killed Shaul." So Rashi tells us, again, Avner could have said to Shaul, "Leave David alone. You see how he's not out to hurt you." But instead, he said, "David's lying." The Gemara interprets the word sirah as a thorn. That piece of cloak must have gotten caught on a thorn. David couldn't have been that close to you. He really does want to kill you, and he only must have found that piece of cloak when he was walking by. He must have found it stuck to a thorn. David was trying to say, "I was this close." I remember when I was in Israel, studying in Israel. Unfortunately, there are always burglaries anywhere. And one night when I was studying there, we had apartments on campus. And this was before the days of cell phones, so there were only about 4 or 5 phones on campus for hundreds of girls. And the phone that was in the dorm area was right outside one of the apartments. And the girls in that apartment were nice enough to, whenever the phone rang, to really come after and find the people who were being called and really get them for the phone. So one night in the middle of the night, a burglar broke into our apartment. And it happened to be that the door of my room was very squeaky. And just that week, he had made a note. He had said, "We have to put in a note to have it oiled." He hadn't gotten around to doing it yet. So when he opened the door to my room, I woke up. But in my semi-conscious state, I couldn't see clearly. I just assumed that it was somebody calling, trying to get someone for the phone. So I was too exhausted. I went back to sleep. I figured, if it's for me, they'll come tap me on the shoulder. Fell back asleep again. But a little while later, I heard the door squeak again, and I saw the person standing in the doorway again. And this time I figured, if they're still looking for someone, then maybe the phone call really is for me. So I jumped out of bed. The minute the person saw me getting out of bed, the person ran away. So I ran after them, because I didn't want to miss the phone call. And it wasn't until I got to the bottom of the staircase leading into the kitchen and saw a man climbing out the window that it actually occurred to me that I was in the process of watching my apartment being robbed. So the end of the story is that when we started to figure out what had been taken, one of the things that, not much was taken thankfully, but one of the things that had been taken was a small amount of money from someone's pocketbook that had been right next to her when she was sleeping. And it was at that moment that really it sank in that somebody had been in our apartment right next to us when we were asleep. And what could have happened? So that's what David HaMelech was telling Avner. I was telling Avner and Shaul, "I was right next to you when you were sleeping. I was this close. I could have done whatever I wanted to. I could have killed you. And I didn't." But instead of Avner taking David's side and portraying the events the way they should have been to Shaul, Avner use that opportunity to say that David was lying and to continue the war and to continue Shaul's pursuing of David. And so therefore, Chazal say that because of that, when Avner came to Shaul, to David, in peace, Yoav legitimately thought that he's lying. Here's a guy who had opportunities before to end the madness, and he chose not to. Why should I believe him this time? And so that's what caused him to be killed. But Yoav had also an ulterior motive, and that was to avenge the death of his brother Asael. And indeed, what was really motivating him? Was it a national reason that he killed Avner, or was it his personal reason? And the Navi tells us a few psukim later, the Navi actually says, "Vayamat v'dam Asael achiv," that Avner died because of the blood of Asael, Yoav's brother. And so we see here that was Yoav's motivating reason. Now, actually, that got Yoav off the hook a little bit. Because if Yoav had killed Avner for national reasons, He would have been judged a Amori B'Malchus. David had just made a treaty with Abner, and so had Yoav gone ahead now and killed him for that reason, then he would have been worthy of death. But because he killed him for a personal reason, as a Goel had done, he was allowed, that was halachically, to kill Avner for personal reasons. The Gemara, and I'm not going to read it inside, but the Gemara at the beginning of source number 9 says that they brought Yoav to a basin, and they said to Yoav, why did you kill Avner? And he said, I killed Avner because I was a Goel Hadam. I was allowed to do that. A person who kills somebody else, the family members of the victim, are allowed to kill the murderer. And so they said to Yoav, you were not a Goel Hadam. This case did not have that halachic status because Asael was chasing after Avner, and therefore he was a rodef. Avner was in danger for his life, and Avner was allowed to do whatever he could to save himself. And so Yoav said, well, not really. Avner, you're supposed to use the least amount of force necessary to save yourself. And Avner could have done anything else to Asael. He didn't have to kill him. He could have wounded him. And so they responded to Yoav and they said, look, Avner was running for his life. He couldn't. He couldn't sit back and say, well, what can I do now to Asael to get him to stop running after me? He just did whatever he could, and that was killing him. So Yoav said, no. When Avner killed Asael, it says that he thrust him through in the chomesh. The chomesh is the fifth rib, right under the fifth rib. And in that exact location is where the vital organs are, the liver, the gallbladder. If Avner could aim and kill Asael or strike Asael in that exact location, in the middle of running away from him, he could have just turned around and wounded Asael any other way. So the Gemara says, Mezil Avner. Yoav is patur for killing Avner. He was acting under the conditions of Goel Hadam, and indeed he was allowed to do so. David HaMelech curses Yoav for this murder, but he then tells Yoav to come and walk with him behind the coffin and mourn for Avner. So we see that although David is furious with Yoav, neither he nor the rest of the country ostracizes him. And so we see that there is some legitimacy to what Yoav has done. The next character to enter the scene. David's firstborn child was Amnon. Amnon fell in love with his half-sister Tamar, and he raped her. Tamar was Absalom's full sister, and Absalom, after a while, went ahead and killed Amnon. And David was very upset. Not only was his son killed, but it was at the hands of another son. And Absalom fled the country for a number of years. Yoav saw that this was paining David, and that David was missing Absalom. And so he devised a plan to convince David to bring Absalom back to the country, which David goes ahead and does. But David doesn't want to see Absalom. Even though he wanted him back, he doesn't want to see him. And neither does Yoav want to see him. Okay, Yoav is not best buddies with Absalom. Yoav doesn't see Absalom until Absalom forces him to come and meet him and to ask David to please, get back together with Absalom. So Yoav goes back to David, arranges a meeting between the two, and David kisses Absalom, essentially forgiving him or re-accepting him back. Absalom, over the next number of years, makes himself very popular among the people and eventually starts his own rebellion, claiming that he is going to be king. And many, many people follow him. At this point, his general is a man named Amasa. Amasa was another nephew of David's, first cousin to Yoav. And during the whole, David is forced to flee with his entire family from the palace. They flee far away. And Yoav goes to fight against Absalom. David specifically instructs Yoav and all the other officers, do not hurt Absalom. Now, Absalom had beautiful, long, thick hair. And while he was running, his hair got caught in he was riding his donkey. His hair got caught in a very branchy, leafy tree, and he was suspended in the air from his hair caught in the branches, and he couldn't extricate himself. And meanwhile, his donkey just ran out from underneath him. So he's dangling from the branches of a tree. Somebody told Yoav about it. And Yoav, knowing exactly what David said, went ahead and killed Absalom. When David heard what happened, he was distraught. I mean, angry. He probably didn't even get to yet. Furious with Yoav, probably, but he was so distraught, he cried and cried for Absalom. And not only, though, does he not rebuke Yoav, but Yoav comes and rebukes David. Yoav says to David, "You're not behaving like a king. You have a people. You have people that you need to be the king over. You have to dry your tears, wash your face, and go talk to your people. You, this man, Absalom, your son, was leading a rebellion against you. And if all you're going to do is sit and cry and mourn and dissolve in tears, then you're essentially saying that you'd rather that me and all of our officers and army have been killed than Absalom. You have to get up, change your clothes, and go talk to your country." And David listens. But a short while later, David replaces Yoav as general of the army with Amasa. So, although it's interesting that David never rebukes Yoav for having killed Absalom, takes away his position. A while later, somebody named Sheva ben Bichri, who's an evil man, came and tried to start another rebellion against David. David at this time is trying to, after this rebellion with Absalom, David's trying to reclaim his control over the entire country. And this man Sheva came and tried to take it away from him again. So David sent Amasa to round up the people of the Bnei Yisrael to try to get them so that they can have another semi-coronation, try to, reclaim this kingdom and have another mini-coronation. And at the same time, he sent Yoav to chase after this wicked man Sheva and kill him. The instruction that David gave Amasa was that, "I want you to go and round up the people and be back in 3 days." Don't forget, Amasa had just led a rebellion against David. 3 days pass, and Amasa does not come back. And what does that mean? Is he Moriv Malchus? Is he disobeying what David had said? Yoav, in his pursuit after Sheva, ends up bumping into Amasa. And he calls him over to talk to him. And he says, "Hey, how are you doing?" And Yoav's sword is dangling in its sheath from its sheath around his waist. And as Yoav goes over to Amasa, he sort of bends down and he grabs Amasa by the beard to give him a hug. And as he bends down, his sword falls out of its sheath onto the ground. And so Yoav bends down to pick it up. So Amasa doesn't think anything strange that Yoav's holding the sword. And at that moment, Yoav takes the sword and he murders Amasa. When David hears about this, he is furious. And at the end of his life, he criticizes Yoav and he says, "Shapaga b'shnei anashim tzadikim b'tovim imenu." He killed two men who were more righteous and better men than he was. Towards the end of David's life, his son Adoniyahu, David is already frail, really towards the end of his life. His son Adoniyahu goes ahead and declares himself king and wages rebellion against David. And this time, Yoav joins the rebellion. What was going on here? Yoav all along was so loyal to David. I mean, he wouldn't accept the fact that either Avner or Amasa could be on David's side after having led rebellions. How could Yoav himself go ahead and rebel against David? Rav Yigal Ariel, who's a rabbi in Israel, wrote a number of Sfarim on Tanakh, and in his Sefer on Shmuel, called Oz Melech, he says, Yoav was an extremely loyal person. But his loyalty was not to David HaMelech, but rather to the Melucha. And if you look at all of the events in this life, it all falls into place and it all makes sense. Everything that happened along the way was because Yoav was very concerned for the continuity of Malchut Beit David. He was very concerned to see that the Melucha would continue. And Yoav was a person that saw things in black and white. Things had to be exactly according to the rules, and there were no exceptions. And when he looked at things. Abner, who was
the general of Shaul's army and had been opposed to David all along, he was a threat to the Malucha of Beit David.
So he had to be killed. And Yoav couldn't accept the fact that Abner could have changed. When Avshalom left the country after he killed Amnon, Avshalom was now next in line for the kingship. But he wasn't in the country. David's oldest son is dead. His next son is out of the country. That was a threat to the continuity of the kingship. And so Yoav arranged to have Avshalom brought back, not because he was in cahoots with Avshalom, not because he liked him, but because he was next in line, and by law, he should be the next king. And he had to ensure the continuity of the kingdom. And so he brought Avshalom back. But when Avshalom rebelled against David, that was not in the rules. Okay, David HaMelech was still king, and Avshalom could be king after he died, but not when David HaMelech was still thriving. And so the Gemara even tells us that Yoav had thoughts about joining the rebellion with Avshalom, but he didn't because David HaMelech at the time was still a strong king. And so he didn't join with Avshalom. He killed Avshalom because Avshalom was a threat. Even though he was David's son and David said, don't touch him, he was a threat to the kingdom. Amasa, who was Avshalom's general, even though he came over to David's side, he was a threat to the kingdom. Although maybe there was a little bit of personal motivation there to get his job back. But Adoniyahu, at this point in time, David HaMelech is already old. He's already weak. He can't remain king much longer. Adoniyahu is the next in line to be king. And so Yoav, for the sake of the Malucha, this time goes along with the rebellion. Now, David had said that Shlomo should be king. But again, Yoav sees things in black and white. Everything has to be according to the rules. Shlomo is not next in line. And so in Yoav's sense of way things have to be, Shlomo cannot be the next king. It has to be Adoniyahu. And so Yoav goes along with the rebellion and anoints Adoniyahu. David HaMelech, at the very end of his life, tells Shlomo, take a look at source number 7, when he gives his last will and testament to Shlomo, he says to him, "V'gam ata yadata et asher asa li Yoav ben Tzruya." You know, Shlomo, what Yoav ben Tzruya did to me. Asher asa l'shnei sarei tzivot Yisrael, v'avner ben ner ulamasa ben yeter, v'yahargem v'yasem dmei nolchama b'shalom. And he killed Avner and Amasa. Innocent blood. He spilled blood of war in the time of peace. He killed when he shouldn't have. You, Shlomo, should act wisely and do not let him die in peace. Radak tells us in source number 8 that David was telling Shlomo, think of a way to kill him. Think of a reason that he deserves to be killed. Because you cannot allow this man to die in peace. This man is a threat to you, and he's a threat to your Malucha. Now, David HaMelech does not kill Yoav. He could have done so himself, but he struggled throughout his life with the sense of hakarat hatov. He owed Yoav so much. Yoav was so helpful to David and so loyal to his kingdom. And so David HaMelech himself could not kill him. And David HaMelech does not have a personal grudge against Yoav. Notice in this pasuk, he tells Shlomo, kill him because of how he murdered two innocent generals. He never says a word about his own son, Avshalom. But David realizes that this man, Yoav, is a threat, and he couldn't ignore the threat. And so he tells Shlomo, you can't ignore the threat, and you have to find a way to deal with him and to make him accountable for the things that he did and to kill him. The Gemara tells us, or the Pasuk tells us, Vayikaver beveito bamidbar. He was buried in his house in the wilderness. Take a look, the last source we're going to look at, right before number 10, last little paragraph there. The Gemara asks, Atu beito midbarhu? Was Yoav's house really in the wilderness? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Ki Midbar. Ma Midbar Mufkar Lakol, Af Beito Shal Yoav Mufkar Lakol. Just like the Midbar, just like the desert, does not belong to anybody, and it's open for anybody to do what they want with. So too, Yoav's house was open to anybody. It wasn't a private house. It was open to everybody. He gave his food to the Aniyim. Everybody was welcome in his house. Ma'amidbar minukha migezel va'arayot, af beito shel Yoav minukha migezel va'arayot. Just like the Midbar, the desert, is a place that is free from stealing and from sexual licentiousness, so too the house of Yoav was a place that was free from thievery and from sexual licentiousness. The picture that we see of Yoav throughout the stories of him in Shmuel Beth and through Chazal is of a man who was a good person, who was a Talmid Chacham, a tremendous warrior, but he was an overzealous person and couldn't accept that a person could change. He had a very narrow view of things, saw things in the here and now, and didn't see the big picture. And therefore, that caused him, in certain circumstances, to act the wrong way, and that eventually became his downfall. Thank you very much. Have a good day.